Galatians is Paul's first letter, written after his return from southern Galatia with Barnabas in about the year 48 AD, when Paul himself is in his early 50s, 51, 52, something like that. Straight after writing that letter, he and Barnabas went down to Jerusalem. I'm going to fill you in to take you to the next stage. Went down to Jerusalem for the big assembly at Jerusalem, which was on this precise topic. How do Gentiles become Christians? Do they need to follow the law? Do they need to become Jews or not? Now, the assembly was fantastic, really. Peter got up and spoke about his experience with Cornelius. And the community agreed, on Peter's advice and with the leader of the apostles, and James, the leader of the presbyters or elders in Jerusalem, they came up with two conclusions to that. One was they agreed with Paul. You didn't have to be a Jew to be a Christian. You didn't have to follow the law. You didn't have to be circumcised. And the people that went up to Antioch, and I'm adding to that, the same group of people who went to Galatia that Paul was arguing with, they did not go with authority from the Jerusalem community. They'd gone on their own authority. And so that decision was made, in which case Paul was completely vindicated. However, on a second issue, it was more difficult, and there was more of a compromise. And that was the difficulty of Jews and Gentiles eating together, which often means the agape meal, the sacred meal, which becomes the Eucharist. How does that occur? And do you remember in Galatians there was an argument that Paul had when he stood out against Peter and Barnabas and the others who withdrew from the community when the group came up from Jerusalem, and they ate privately, and the Jews were in one group and the Gentiles were like secondary Christians, as it were. And Paul was very strong against that, and he'll always remain strong against that. We must have one communion, and of course that's true. Well, in the Jerusalem assembly they made a decision, and Paul seems to have agreed with it, because Acts tells us that he gave this agreement when he went on his next journey, which I'm about to do with you. And that was that when they came together, the Gentiles had to eat like Jews. They had to follow the kosher. They couldn't eat strangled meat and things with blood in them and so on. And that was a practical decision, compromising maybe, but also sensitive, because Judaism was under a lot of pressure at this time. The war with Rome is about to break out, and Jerusalem's about to be destroyed, and being a Jew was a pretty vulnerable thing. So the Christian Jews who wanted to reach out to their brother and sister Jews were trying to bend over backwards to honour Judaism, because they loved it. They're Jews. They're Christian Jews, but they're Jews. So they were in the majority in this part of the world, so they thought it was appropriate for the Gentiles to follow the Torah when it comes to these eating practices. And the reason they give in the Acts of the Apostles chapter 15 is that the Torah is read everywhere. And remember that the first Gentiles that became Christians were Gentiles who were devout Gentiles, Gentiles attached to the synagogue, Gentiles who had heard of God, of Yahweh, and honoured that God. Well, in the law it says that these laws, these food laws, apply to Jews and Gentiles living in the land. Because it says that every week they announce the Torah. So they would have expected this. So that was the compromise anyhow. That was the agreement. And so they go back, and Silas and another man called Joseph are sent back from the Jerusalem church to convey to Antioch what the decisions of the church are. They're no sooner back when Paul decides to revisit the churches that he and Barnabas had visited a year or two before. So they set out from, they'd gone from Jerusalem back to Antioch. Paul wanted Barnabas to go with him, but Barnabas insisted on Mark joining them. And Mark had been with them when they went on their first journey a couple of years before, but Mark had pulled out as soon as they hit the mainland. And Paul said, no, like equivalently, I'll give my words, he's too young, you can't trust him, I'm not, you know, going to be bothered with him, we need some real missionaries on this journey. And Barnabas, who was his uncle or his cousin, said, no, no, Mark should come. So they decided to disagree. Barnabas and Mark go back to Cyprus, where Barnabas came from. That was his home country. And Paul chose Silas to go with him on his missionary journey. So what did they do? This is all in the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 15, 16, 17. That you can read it for yourself. They set off from Antioch overland. So they went, as we're told, through Syria and Cilicia. And maybe he popped in at home, Tarsus, on the way. Which he could have. Then he goes to Derbe and Lystra. This is in Lycaonia, is the region. It's the southern part of the province of Galatia. So they went to Derbe and Lystra, and at Lystra, he met up with two lovely women who had been converted on his previous journey, Lois and Eunice, the grandmother and mother of a young man called Timothy. And Timothy, Paul wants to take Timothy with him. Timothy has a mother, a Jew, and a father who's a Greek. That makes him a Jew. And he should have been circumcised as a young boy, but he wasn't. Perhaps his father, we don't know why. Father may not have wanted it, or the mother may have been a bit slack. Anyhow, Paul insists that he be circumcised because he's a Jew, and that really brings to our mind the fact that Paul was not against circumcision. He was only against circumcision being imposed upon Gentiles. And he was also against Jews thinking that circumcision was the basis of their salvation. It's not, it's faith. So he insisted on that, but circumcision's fine if you're a Jew, of course. So he took Timothy with him, and then Acts of the Apostles tells us in chapter 16, and this is an academic point, I won't make a lot of it, it says, the exact verse is 16 verse 6, they went through the region, singular, of Phrygia and Galatia. And there are books written on this, and I'm going to give you an answer in about 2 seconds, so you can see that I'm only summarising an opinion among many. You see, there were two regions. There's the region of Phrygia, which includes Antioch and Iconium. Phrygia actually went all that central part. Most of it was in the Roman province of Asia. But eastern Phrygia included Antioch, which was the capital, and Iconium. So the region of Phrygia, that would explain. The region of Galatia is the northern part here, where the Celts had been kind of landlocked back in the 3rd century BC. That's really the region of Galatia. But according to the Acts, he went through one region. It doesn't say the regions, it says the region. And I think the most probable explanation is that it's the region of Phrygia that is in Galatia. Galatia is also a Roman province. So it's Galatian Phrygia that they went through. So here, and the reason for that is that those who hold the other opinion suggest that Galatia is the northern area that Paul wrote to, which of course is not the opinion I'm following. At any rate, he goes through there. They were going to go to Asia, probably Ephesus, but the Acts says, but the Spirit of Jesus asked them not to do that, not to go through Galatia, into Asia. So he's praying, trying to discern where God's will is, and they go rather northern. It says, when they were opposite Mysia, they were going to go to Bithynia, but again, the Spirit of Jesus said no. So they're trying to all the time discern what to do in regard to this. So they went, they didn't go to Bithynia, and they found their way over to Troas. Okay, so that's the journey. It looks simple, and I've done it in 3 minutes, but it's actually about 1,500 kilometres, and they're going through rivers, they're climbing mountains, there's alligators, there's malaria, they're on mules. I mean, it's a lot. It's an 8-month journey or something like that. Then we come to the map I did give you earlier. So here we are at Troas, and for the first time in the Acts of the Apostles, we have a passage that says, we went on ship too. We. It's all been they. Many scholars, and the tradition is that here's Luke. This is Luke now. Luke is now with Paul. He met up with Paul, perhaps at Troas. And it's Luke is with them, and he, others have other opinions, but I'll leave it at that. They went by ship to Samothrace. Paul had had a vision in Troas asking him to come to Macedonia. They went up to Neapolis, and at Neapolis they joined one of the famous Roman roads. You know, all roads lead to Rome. Well, this is the Via Egnatia, which runs from the Bosphorus here across here through Neapolis, Philippi, Thessalonica, north of Berea, across to Nicopolis on the Albanian coast, Illyrica the Romans called it, and then you'd get a boat across to Brindisi, which is on the heel of Italy, and then the Via Appia, the famous, the oldest of the Roman roads, goes right to Rome. So Rome is connected to Philippi via the Via Appia, a short sea journey, and then the Via Ignatia. Some scholars suggest Paul may have had his eye on going to Rome even at this stage, because he mentions in his letter to the Romans, written some 6 years later, that he's always wanted to go to Rome. For many years I've been wanting to go there. Anyhow, at Philippi he preaches, I won't go into that now, he gets into trouble there, he has to get out to escape for his life, he's imprisoned there, he goes along to Thessalonica, and he's there for a little while, we don't know how long, but in his later letter to Philippians he says how on more than one occasion you sent me resources to help me. So he wasn't there for a week or two, he was there for a considerable time, maybe a month, maybe 3 weeks, maybe 5 weeks. And again he has to flee for his life, and this time he has to leave the Via Ignatia and go into the hill country to a place called Berea, where he was welcomed, accepted, but the people of the Jews from Thessalonica, who saw him, many of them became Christians, but many of them opposed what he was doing. So they tracked him down to Berea, and so at night some of the Christians here got him on a boat and took him down the river, and then they got a boat and went all the way down here to Athens. There's a beautiful scene there of his lovely speech that he gives at Athens, and then he heads off for Corinth. So we're at Corinth, you're kind of still with me, and he's going to write from Corinth back to Thessalonica. That's why I'm giving you all this introduction. Corinth is very interesting. In the Acts of the Apostles, it says that Paul was there for 18 months. So we take it that Luke knew. Two things he also tells us, and they're the only things really that give us a firm dating on Paul's life. It's not absolutely agreed, but the vast majority of scholars hold this, and I'll give it to you simply, and it's a safe opinion anyhow, and more than that, I think. It tells us, if you remember, that when he went to Corinth, if you want the reference, it's Acts 18, the beginning of chapter Acts 18. He met two people there who had recently been expelled from Rome, Aquila and his wife Priscilla. And he met them in the marketplace, and they also were what were they called here, tent makers. It may not be too accurate. They're people who work with this enormous big needle, and it was a very useful trade if you're constantly travelling. But what they did, they made tents, yes. They made these hangings, you know, on the marketplace to protect you from the sun. They worked with leather, but also cloth, calico and all that kind of thing, making gear. And it was handy, you could get the stuff and work there. And he met these two who had been recently expelled from Rome. We know from Suetonius, a Latin Roman historian, writing about the emperors, that the Emperor Claudius did expel some Jews from Rome, and the date given later by Hosius, another historian, was the date 49. That's argued, but it's very probable. It's the most comfortable date, 49 AD. And it doesn't seem that Claudius didn't expel all Jews from Rome. What Suetonius says is they expelled these Jews because of Christos. That's all he says, because of Christos. A reconstruction would suggest that what happened was in one of the synagogues in Rome, and there were many, a particular group of Jews and Christians probably got at loggerheads over Christ. You know, it stirred up trouble between the Jews and the Christians, which was a bit unusual. Mostly they were quite willing. So over that, possibly Suetonius kicked all the people in that synagogue, expelled them out, all those who weren't Roman citizens anyhow, and that would include these two. So that gives us a bit of a date. Second thing that happens in Corinth, you know, I hope I'm not boring you with all this detail, but Acts of the Apostles tells us that Paul was brought up before Gallio, the proconsul. Now we know this. Gallio's brother was Seneca, the famous literary Roman writer. Seneca, his letters and all that kind of thing. And Seneca tells us that his brother Gallio did not even survive the 1 year of being proconsul. So he wasn't there for a year. He left early. We know that. We also know from an inscription found at Delphi and one other one which I can't remember where it's from, that Gallio was in Corinth in the year 51 AD. So I'm suggesting to you, and it's from that I and others have worked out that date line that I gave you of Paul's life. Once we can fix Corinth, we can work back and we can work forward and get a pretty good chronological date line for Paul's life. Paul arrived in Corinth. He would have had to arrive before winter because he couldn't travel by sea in winter. It was impossible. There were no ships took to sea at that time. So let's say he arrived in Corinth in the autumn, that is November, September, October, November, because their winter, as you know, is at Christmas time, December. So he arrived late in the year 50, was there throughout 51, and probably Paul left with, or at the same time as Gallio, as soon as the winter had finished and the spring of 52, which is 18 months. He had told, when he left Berea, he left behind him, and we know this, he left behind him Silvanus, or Silas, and Timothy. And he sent a message to them from Athens to meet him in Corinth. So they got this message, and when they'd finished, they came to Corinth. They came to Corinth with certain information, problems, questions, and the letter we're about to read, let's assume written in very late, in the winter of 50, 51 probably, so they probably sent it off in the spring of 51, a letter back to Thessalonica here, answering their questions, dealing with their concerns, and also what he'd remembered and what Timothy told him vocally, which we haven't got, of course. So that's our letter. Is that okay? Introduction? I think that's long enough. I don't want to delay on it too long. So let's now look at the letter. It's quite a brief letter. It's only 48 sentences in Greek. It's dealing mainly with problems. It's unlike the Galatian letter, which Paul pours his whole heart and soul into Galatian letter, and it's his whole essence of the gospel. It's quite engaging and very emotional, really, and also mentally very demanding. This is facing two problems. So what were the problems? The two key problems were persecution. They were surprised. They'd become Christians. But of course a lot of the others didn't. And just picture yourself becoming a Christian in Thessalonica in the year 50, beginning of the year 50 AD. All your friends are going off to the club, or the equivalent. They're going off to these places where there are gods and you have to worship the god and all that kind of thing, the different statues and what they represented. And then they worship the emperor. They worship anything that stands, really, because they want to be on side with the divinities and all these powers that they're afraid of. So that's common in a paganism. Excuse me. Excuse me. How did that sound through there? I beg your pardon. But now the Christians can't do that anymore. They don't want to do it anymore. They're kind of not allowed to do it anymore. And so they... they were having to avoid social occasions as well. Second thing, if anything went wrong in the town, if there was a shortage of water, if there was a shortage of food, famine, if there was sickness in the town, can't you imagine the whole community blaming them? This is happening to us because you lot aren't honouring the gods. They called them atheists. The Christians were often called atheists because they didn't worship the gods. So they were an easy pick if there was any problem. So the fact is they were suffering persecution, and that's never easy. And they were wondering about it because they thought Christianity would bring them love, and they thought Christianity would bring them community, and they thought Christianity would kind of, like a fire, go through the town beautifully, and people would be attracted to it because they found it so attractive. That's not a surprise. The second thing that was happening in the community, and we'll have to come to this next week, but people had died in the 6 months, 8 months, 1 year, whatever it was, between Paul's visit there early in 50 and when they get their letter back later, early the next year. People had died. And there was, in Thessalonica and throughout the Christian communities, a heightened expectation that the success, that Jesus is risen, powerful, and that the world would be converted to Christianity quickly. And the success of Christianity was so remarkable, it's not surprising they would have that. They used terms like Christ would come again. That Christ, the risen Christ, would come and the reign of God would be complete and people would turn from paganism and Jews would grow into Christians and there would be this new heaven and a new earth and justice and so on. That was a dream they had. It was an expectation they seemed to have had. You find it right through the New Testament. Well, people, they thought they'd see it. But people died. They're not going to see it. What's going to happen to these people who died? That's another question that emerges in this letter. So persecution's one thing, the death of Christians is another, and how are they going to enjoy the new heaven and the new earth? Is that clear enough, those two questions? As you watch this letter, I'd like to recommend to you that you please notice the beautiful affection that Paul has. Notice the lovely he must have been a very good friend. He had a tremendous passion, I suppose, for things, a zeal, but he also had a lovely capacity for friendship and affection, and that pours out of this letter. You'll see it in many places.